Coming up this half hour, Pets on the Couch, the science of the similarities in treating mental health problems in pets and humans. Also, how pet pigs communicate with their humans. And who was sitting in the stands at a popular NFL game? We'll find out. First, in Scientific American, September 2016, Gareth Cook has this report, Psychiatry for Animals. Pets on the Couch, author Nicholas Dodman argues that animals have mental health problems similar to our own and benefit from similar treatments. After the death of his longtime companion, Maxwell fell into a dark place. He no longer seemed to take joy in life. He refused to eat much and lost a dangerous amount of weight, so much that his liver faltered. Following a stay in intensive care to stabilize him, Max was given antidepressants, and this, combined with changes in the home environment, eventually drew him out of his deep depression. Max is a cat. He's also one of the many patients who appeared in the pages of Pets on the Couch, the newest book by Nicholas Dodman, author of The Dog Who Loved Too Much. Dodman, founder of the Animal Behavior Clinic at Tufts University, shares the stories of a variety of animals, horses, parrots, cats, dogs, and argues that many of their psychiatric disorders have human analogs. Our pets have human qualities, he says, and recognizing this will allow us to help them better and learn about ourselves. He answered questions from Mind Matters editor Gareth Cook. Question: how did you become interested in the psychological problems of animals? Dodman responds, in an earlier part of my career, some 40 years ago, I was a specialist veterinary anesthesiologist. Before anesthesia, I could see that most patients were stressed, sometimes by the strange setting and the whole process, and some were in pain. Ditto regarding the recovery period. I set about making the process less psychologically distressing for them, inventing, via appropriate medications, what I referred to as the magic carpet ride. With the aid of various cocktails of anti-anxiety drugs and analgesics, I arranged for our surgical patients to practically float into the induction room without a care in the world and recover similarly unfazed. It was a rewarding experience to make animals feel so much more comfortable during a stressful time. The event that brought about my conversion from anesthesiologist to behaviorist was one of those fortunate eureka moments while conducting a trial of morphine in horses along with my erudite sidekick, Dr. Lewis Schuster, a pharmacologist. A happenstance observation of horses so treated was that they engaged in repetitive behaviors referred to as stereotypies. I knew that similar behaviors were exhibited by stalled horses that had not been given morphine. That led to a bright idea. How about giving a morphine antagonist to horses with the naturally occurring stereotypies known to equestrians as stall vices? Perhaps these behaviors were fueled by nature's one morphine-like substances, endorphins. If so, a morphine antagonist like naloxone or Narcan should stop them in their tracks. Long story short, it did, and we were all converts into the brain-behavior connection. In my book, I tell the story of the first horse we ever treated this way, a palomino called Poker's Queen Bee, a compulsive stereotyper who constantly anchored her large incisor teeth onto the stall door and leaned back, grunting as she went. Poker's behavior stopped as soon as the Narcan was injected. That experiment made three converts. The horse owner quit her job as highly paid executive in Boston to do a PhD in biochemistry at Loyola University in Chicago. Dr. Schuster changed his research focus from studying drugs of addiction to behaviors of addiction. And I switched from anesthesiologist to a person consumed by an interest in behavior, in what makes animals tick. Question: what is the evidence that animals suffer the same kinds of psychological problems as humans? Why do you think this is a useful analogy? Dodman responds, Veterinary behaviorists acknowledge a plethora of behavior problems that plague animals. They treat aggression, anxiety-based conditions, excessive fears and phobias, compulsive behaviors like poker's stall biting, and more recently, even post-traumatic stress. Reference to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry, the DSM, the Diagnostic Bible for Psychiatrists, confirms that humans suffer from similar conditions. In fact, there is much we veterinary behaviorists see that does not have a compelling counterpart in the DSM. Some argue that the mental behavioral conditions animals suffer from may look like the human conditions, but that's where the similarity ends. But in my book, I discuss the fact that that isn't where the similarity ends. We have found a gene that predisposes a dog breed, Doberman Pinscher, to a canine form of compulsive behavior, blanket and flank sucking. Glitches in that gene have subsequently been confirmed to be involved in conferring susceptibility to obsessive compulsive behavior, OCD, in humans. Sophisticated imaging studies have confirmed that the brains of affected Dobermans show changes that are similar to those found in people with OCD. We also came up with a novel treatment for compulsive behavior in animals and found that the same treatment works well in human sufferers. That treatment was with drugs that block the excitatory neurotransmitter glutamate at NMDA receptors, which our newly discovered gene is instrumental in forming. We made that discovery because certain right-handed dextrorotary versions of opioid blockers that shouldn't block opioid systems reduced the frequency of repetitive behaviors in animals. That didn't make sense to us, so where were these drugs acting? On NMDA receptors was the only solution we could come up with because all varieties of opioid blockers worked there. So we tried right-handed versions of opioid agonists and antagonists, as well as ketamine, a known NMDA antagonist in an equine model. All of the drugs worked. This led to a Tufts patent that, to this day, has yet to garner the interest of Big Pharma. But that did not stop us from publishing a study showing that human OCD sufferers benefit from a glutamate-blocking drug, memantine. Memantine is still in use today, off-label, to treat OCD in humans and animals. Question: tell me about your experiences with war dogs. Dodman responds, I identified post-traumatic behavioral changes in dogs years ago. My first subject described in the book was a dog that had been shot by a Boston policeman. Following this near-death event, the dog became hypervigilant, terrified of anything to do with the police, police cars, sirens, men in police uniform, and would shake and shiver and avoid them like the plague. He was brought to me because of his nighttime issues, difficulty sleeping, and nightmarish acting out at night. Fast forward to Gina, a dog whose job it was to enter terrorist strongholds after a flashbang grenade had been tossed in. Imagine the blinding flash, the noise, the shouting and confusion. On coming home, Gina showed signs of PTSD, and her story made it to the national press. I have seen many cases of PTSD in my clinical practice, not from the trauma of war, but other terrifying and traumatic experiences. Slowly but surely, the Army came around to recognizing PTSD in dogs of war. It is now called canine PTSD, or CPTSD. Not all dogs of war are susceptible to it, only about 5 to 10%. Yet, not all soldiers are susceptible to PTSD. Our treatment of CPTSD is with mood stabilizers like Prozac and drugs that block the action of adrenaline-type neurotransmitters like clonidine, and some dogs show acceptable or even good improvement. Some veterans with PTSD are treated along the same lines, using mood stabilizers and anti-adrenaline drugs. Question: how do you see OCD at work in animals? Dodman responds, all veterinary behaviorists see compulsive behaviors in their caseload on a regular basis. Purists decline to call it obsessive, because you can't access animals' thoughts, so obsessions are difficult, if not impossible, to verify. So canine versions are referred to as a canine compulsive disorder, CCD. The feline version is FCD, and so on across the species. A classical canine compulsive disorder is acrolic, which I describe in detail in the book. Not only does it look like a human OCD, hand washing, but it responds to treatment with medications in the same way and over the same time course as the human condition. Now that the genetics underlying compulsive disorders in humans and animals, dogs at least, are falling into place and brain imaging studies take the parallels even further, it is getting harder to stick to the human exceptionalism explanation for psychiatric disease, and easier to accept the fact that we are all mammals on this planet together. It's hardly surprising that we are so similar, given the fact that we share virtually the same DNA and have more than half of our genes in common. More and more, the one medicine approach to treating biological systems, human or animal, is paying off in the things that we can learn about animals from studying humans, and vice versa. Question: what are the questions in animal psychiatry that you are most excited to explore next? Dodman responds, the next steps in animal psychiatry are to identify genes and pathways involved in a plethora of humanesque behavioral issues. For example, I have just read about the discovery of canine genes involved in anxiety and stress. I assume human researchers will jump right on this to check if the same genes are involved in anxiety disorders in people. Once the genes are known, the downstream pathways can be identified and new points of therapeutic intervention can be devised. This way, each and every human psychiatric condition with an animal equivalent can be studied in spontaneously occurring veterinary equivalents. It's a win-win for animals and people to proceed in this way. It's a much more productive way to search for genes in, say, dog breeds, which are closed populations, than in the outbred human population. The needle is the same size, but the haystack is smaller. Next, from people.com, your dog's personality is changing over time as your pet ages. New study shows. This was written by Eric Todisco, October 2020. According to the study's findings, dogs' novelty-seeking trait declines after they turn 3. Dogs aren't so different from humans after all. According to a new study published Wednesday in Scientific Reports, dogs' personalities change over time with age, just like humans, and each trait follows a distinct age trajectory. Similar to humans, dog personality is both stable and malleable, said the study's lead author, a research fellow at ETVS, Loren University in Budapest, Hungary. Dogs that are active and curious when young will remain active and curious when they get old, but only compared to other dogs. A dog's personality changes over time, and on average, every dog becomes less active and less curious as they age. According to the study, Turkson and her colleagues initially investigated the personality of 217 border collies with an age range of 6 months to 15 years using the Vienna Dog Personality Test. 4 years later, 37 of the dogs still alive were brought back, along with their owners, to be retested. The studies conducted on the dogs included an exploration test, a frustration test, a novel object test, a ball-playing test, an obedience test, and a problem-solving test. Using the test results, the researchers found that the dog's attentiveness and problem-solving skills improved until about 6 years of age and then stabilized. The novelty-seeking trait, meaning the dog's excitement and enjoyment for new situations, declined after they turned 3. The dog's ability to tolerate frustration and the desire to socialize both remain the same over the 4 years, but their activity levels unsurprisingly decreased as they aged, the study found. Dr. Catherine Hout, professor emeritus at the Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine, told NBC News that the study's findings may not apply equally to all dog breeds. They use the smartest breed to study and the downward trends when it comes to diminution in novelty seeking might be different with beagles, for example, she said. Hout also pointed out the good news from the study for dog owners. Dogs get less active with age, and that should give hope to the people who have puppies that are too active, she said, adding that as the dogs get older, they remain obedient and social, which is probably the most important thing for owners. Next, National Geographic's Liz Langley reports pet pigs can communicate with humans, especially when food is involved. Compared with dogs, little research has been done on how domesticated pigs interact with people. While both dogs and pigs can communicate with their human counterparts, pigs are more likely to engage when food is involved. Pigs and dogs share a lot in common. They're both intelligent, friendly animals that often makes them attractive as household pets. Ongoing research on how dogs communicate with people have revealed that canines are closely attuned to our emotions and can detect even the most subtle of feelings. But little similar research has been done in other domesticated animals, such as mini pigs, a catch-all term that characterizes just about any small breed pig. Pig ownership has increased in recent years. Since 1998, for instance, the number of mini pigs in the United States and Canada has risen from 200,000 to perhaps as many as 1 million. But due to some irresponsible breeders, many people get tricked into buying a pig without realizing there is no such thing as a mini pig. All pigs, miniature or not, get big. And the majority of these animals end up in shelters or are euthanized. But because many people worldwide still keep pigs as companions, it's important to learn how the animals interact with their owners. In the new study, the scientists compared how 4-month-old pigs and puppies with no training responded to human cues. The results, published recently in the journal Animal Cognition, show similarities between barkers and oinkers, but overall reveal that pigs are less responsive to people than our dogs. Of course, dogs have a leg up, so to speak. Dogs' domestication dates back to more than 15,000 years, while pigs' domestication is less than 10,000 years, says study leader Linda Garinger, an animal behaviorist at Eötvös Loránd University in Budapest. What's the point? Food. In the first experiment, the scientists recruited 10 Minnesota and mixed breed mini pigs and 10 dogs of 8 various breeds from homes in Hungary. Each animal was placed in a room with its owner and a female experimenter. The experimenter then gave the subject food at 2-minute intervals and observed its reaction between feedings. Both the puppies and the piglets oriented toward and touched the experimenter with equal frequency. When the expected food was not given, though, only the puppies continued looking toward the person's face, while the pigs lost interest and went their own way. That could be because pigs are very motivated by food, Christina Horback, assistant professor of animal science at the University of California, Davis, said by email. Wild and feral pigs forage for 8 to 10 hours a day, she says, and as omnivores, they will gather as much food as possible in their environment. In the second experiment, scientists wanted to see how the animals, 9 mini pigs and 9 dogs this time, reacted to the human gesture of pointing. In front of each study animal, the experimenter stood between 2 solidly colored containers on the floor, one empty and one with food inside, and pointed to the one with the food in it. Only the dogs responded to pointing, following the gesture to the bin containing food. The pigs chose one container randomly and kept going to that side every time. A history with humans. Given the respective histories and anatomy of the animals, the results are easy to understand, the scientists say. Dogs, for instance, have been bred for working closely together with humans, meaning that it became important for them to seek information about human attentional states, Garinger says. Dogs even evolved specialized eyebrow muscles that give them those sweet facial expressions, a trait their wolf ancestors don't have. Pigs, conversely, were selected for optimizing meat production, all of which might explain to some extent pigs' overall lower tendency to orient toward the human face, she says. Horbeck also notes that dogs look for more visual cues, such as bared teeth or flattened ears, in their kin, whereas pigs will often rely on their sense of smell from a fellow pig's mouth and snout. Anatomy may also play a role. Pigs also have less flexible necks than do dogs and can't raise their heads for long periods, factors that may have impaired their ability to perceive the experimenter's hand gestures, Horbeck notes. Pigs are definitely smart enough to understand human hand gestures, she adds. Pigs can be trained to follow a human hand to receive a reward, says Horbeck, who has trained many adult female pigs to follow her hand in order to use a touchscreen or joystick with their snout to receive food rewards. In general, she adds, the research did a great job showing similarities in the human orientation behaviors of human-reared pigs and dogs. The article also points out in sidebars that pigs can be great pets, but legitimate breeders have been trying to educate potential owners of the responsibility they're taking on by adopting one. Experts advise potential owners to be fully informed about the responsibility and risks associated with pet pigs. And now from People.com, October 19, 2020, Kelly Bender reports, Sunday's NFL game between the Texans and the Titans had a special audience, 200 adoptable pets. The Tennessee Titans teamed up with Mars Pet Care to help pets find forever homes during the Better Cities for Pets Adoption Weekend. During Sunday's NFL game between the Tennessee Titans and the Houston Texans, which ended in a 42-36 victory for the Titans, at-home viewers might have spotted their future pet sitting in one of the seats of Nissan Stadium. The Titans partnered with Mars Pet Care this month as part of the pet food company's Better Cities for Pets Adoption Weekend. The annual event raises awareness and interest in pet adoption, helping hundreds of pets find homes each year, and was expanded for 2020, a year that has seen a surge in pet adoptions as more and more animal lovers seek out the companionship of a pet during the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. This year, the Better Cities for Pets Adoption Weekend was held virtually from October 17th to 18th and included 5 shelters in Central Tennessee and Houston, Texas that are part of the Mars Pet Care's Better Cities for Pets program. For the weekend, Mars Pet Care covered all the adoption fees from those shelters up to $100,000, making it easier for families to give a home to a rescue pet. Adopters were also treated to pet food and other supplies needed for helping a furry friend settle into their new home. To support the effort, the Tennessee Titans filled 200 seats of Nissan Stadium with giant cutouts of adoptable pets for their games against the Texans. The viewers were encouraged to visit www.bettercitiesforpets.com/adoptionweekend2020 to learn more about bringing home one of the pets they spotted in the stadium. If a certain dog or cat caught your eye during Sunday's game, the website is full of information that could help you meet your perfect pet match. We're proud to work with Mars Pet Care to promote this year's Adoption Weekend, Gil Beverly, the Titans Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing and Revenue Officer, said in a release about the partnership. We're excited to lend our seats to those pets in need of a loving home and promote this important cause in a safe and healthy manner. And finally, inseparable rescue fox and bulldog best friends are the real-life fox and the hound. This was reported by Claudia Harmada, October 2020, in People.com. They do everything together, said Pauline Ashinola, mom to Marley, the rescue fox, and Ernie the bulldog. It's a Disney movie brought to life. When Pauline Ashinola rescued a little 6-month-old fox, who she named Marley, she wasn't sure how her dogs would take to the new sibling from another species. I was worried about Marley at first and how she would get on with the dogs, especially. Ernie was terrified of Marley at first, and she didn't like him, but she slowly started sleeping closer to him. She told Daily Mail of the initial interactions between her bulldog, Ernie, and Marley. However, the animals started to form a stronger and stronger bond the more time they spent together. After I'd had her about 3 weeks, they started playing together. Ashinola said, one day they just started running around together, and they've been best friends ever since. They do everything together. They're inseparable, she added. They play with each other all day. They sleep together every night. They go for walks together. Ashinola, an avid animal lover from Isle of Wight in England, said that a couple in her community had found little Marley abandoned in April when the fox was just 2 weeks old. Unable to find a nearby animal rescue, they brought the cub to Ashinola, who gave up her dream of being a dog groomer, to treat and care for Marley. Marley was so poorly when we found her. She was covered in flies and ticks. They were in her ears, everywhere, Ashinola recalled. She was throwing up worms, really big ones. She definitely would have died if she'd been found just 15 minutes later. For the next 6 weeks, she nursed the little fox back to health, syringe feeding her kitten milk every 90 minutes through the day and night, and getting her the proper medication to treat her worms and ticks. After the first course of medication, it was clear she just wasn't getting better. So she ended up on medication for 4 months, Ashinola said. I've had so much help and advice from pets and fox rescues, but it has been a big, big commitment looking after her. She's aged me about 10 years, and I had to give up my dream job because this little fox came along. But it's all been worth it to see her so happy and healthy. And Ashinola has also loved seeing the friendship between Marley and Ernie blossom. If I take Ernie out for a walk without Marley, she gets so excited when Ernie gets home. She goes mad. She absolutely loves him, Ashinola said. I call Ernie Marley's babysitter. He's my little nanny dog. If I need to get something done or I'm a bit tired, I'll tell him. Go and play with your little sister. It's so nice seeing how well they've bonded. It's quite an unusual friendship, she added. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thank you for listening. Please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment.